You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Michael Carter, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us. We're excited to be on.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was Michael Weistrack, the co-founder and CEO of Freshly, and your co-founder and chief innovation officer, Carter Comstock. Tell us a little bit about Freshly, what it's about, and maybe a little bit of background on how you two met.
Yeah, well, so to make it easier for the listeners, I'm Michael Weistrack, co-founder and CEO. Yeah, so we started Freshly really trying to solve our own problems, which was that we're two guys who like to eat healthy, but we're not huge fans of cooking. Carter's background is much more around actually understanding what is healthy. My kind of background is the business side. And when we originally started the company, I was being super lazy and just saying, hey, Carter, why don't you come up with a menu that would work for me to get healthy? And I had a restaurant at the time and I said, I'll just give it to my chefs. You know, I kind of was trying to solve my problem of how do I eat healthy and have, you know, how do I hack my own personal chef and nutritionist? And we realized that the solution was something that, you know, people started seeing me and the results I was getting and started asking if we could do it for them. And we kind of stumbled into a business, which is, you know, kind of a fortunate way to make a business. But it was really around the idea of how do we make it really easy for people to eat healthy?
Yeah. And I'll say that people at Lumi love Freshly. There's quite a few people who at lunch are having your meals. And I typically like to cook, but I have stolen the chili from my co-founder, Jesse, on occasion because it's so good. One of the things that's pretty unique about what you do is obviously you're shipping meals to people, but they're not frozen. Do you want to describe a little bit about your choices there and maybe what's hard about delivering food in the mail?
Yeah, so it's a complicated model we decided to jump into. Shipping fresh product and fresh food is something that's relatively new. And so we had to figure out how do you take a fresh product, cook it, prepare it, package it, ship it, and you have limited shelf life. And you need to keep the product chilled the entire time. And so it was super challenging to figure out. And we kind of had to, through trial and error, feel our way through it. And eventually it led us to developing our own proprietary technology and proprietary kitchen that enables us to do it. So really those huge challenges ended up being huge advantages for us as we figured them out.
You mentioned that it's obviously a new market. It's also a market that has changed a lot in the past 2 years. Blue Apron went public. Blue Apron's kind of in a little bit of a different space because, you know, you have to assemble the meal yourself. Amazon bought Whole Foods. There's some big meal kit type of companies that went out of business. I'm just curious, what do you see? What's the state of the union for the market at the moment? It's one that's in still a lot of innovation and invention, but it's also one that has changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's happening in food is really exciting. I think, you know, the counterpoint to that argument is food's a $1.2 trillion industry in the U.S. alone. Only about 2% of food purchases are made online. Whereas if you look at retail, about 10 to 12% of total retail purchases are made online. So food's actually been fairly slow and behind the curve on getting people going online. As you think about, like, I'm sure your own purchasing behavior and you look back 5 years ago, I imagine a lot more of your purchasing and certainly your listeners' purchasing is done online. I think the interesting thing is when you look at food, specifically around big manufacturing in food, if you take your top 10 manufacturers in food, your CPGs, their average age is 150 years old. So it's actually an industry that hasn't really been disrupted. I think the interesting thing is anytime you go in and disrupt a massive industry like food, there's going to be failures. There's going to be, you know, amazing success stories. There's going to be things that seem like they were winners at the beginning and turned out not to be the winners people thought they were going to be. And I think, you know, you see a little bit of that in the meal kit space where you have, you know, 19 VC-backed companies all doing roughly the same thing, still a tremendous amount of success. And I think the important thing to remember with the meal kit, it is now in the US, it is a $4 billion industry, which 5 years ago didn't exist, literally did not exist. So while you can judge success in different metrics, and certainly Blue Apron's had some challenges going public, and that's, you know, anyone who follows the story knows that. You know, I think when you look at Postmates, DoorDash, Grubhub, Seamless, Freshly, the likes of the others who are succeeding and doing really well and changing the way consumers are thinking about food is it's an exciting, I think, an Amazon Whole Foods purchase is exciting. Like, you know, Carter and I are both huge fans of Whole Foods. We've been following it for a long time. Whole Foods was a huge leader in the change of the way people think about food, the expectations of companies actually being stewards and having, you know, obligations to the consumer to make sure that they're doing a first screen. So I think the fact that Amazon made that purchase for us was something really exciting, because at the end of the day, yes, we're both co-founders of a food company, but we're also consumers of food like everyone else. And, you know, the reason we started this company is we thought food was broken. The reality is, if you're going to die in America, the odds are that you're going to kill yourself through the food you're eating. And that's a scary proposition that we're looking at. So we're huge fans when Amazon bought Whole Foods, because our belief was that this was the same thing we were doing, is that there's a $1.2 trillion market. There's going to need to be a lot of players who really change the way food companies act and behave if we want to, as a country, as a society, as a world, change the way we eat. And I think that, you know, so we're really excited on the momentum that's happening in food and food tech. And certainly there's some glitches and some bubbles and some areas that, you know, maybe aren't what people thought they were going to be. But that happens every time you disrupt any kind of market.
So going from a market that didn't exist to 4 billion, but at the same time, you know, you're saying that only 2% of food is purchased online. What has changed in terms of like the consumer when you're talking to people who you're trying to convince to join Freshly? Have you noticed a big shift in that? Or is there always this like next frontier of people who basically have never even heard of the concept of a meal kit?
Yeah, so I think, so meal kits definitely, if you look at what happened, meal kit was kind of the first push. So more and more people know of Blue Apron HelloFresh because they were out and they spent a bunch of money on marketing. The reality is, I think that solved some problems for the consumer, but at the end of the day, consumers are busy. And I think the biggest challenge was that you usually go online to make your life easier. You know, if you're a big cook and you love cooking, chances are you love going to Whole Foods and picking your vegetables and your meat or chicken or fish or whatever it may be, or you love going to the farmer's market. So I think there ended up being a bit of a gap in that, you know, that wasn't solving a lot of consumers' interest in going online. But I think what you're starting to see is like all of us. I don't know about you, but I certainly, anytime I go to purchase something, I pick up my mobile phone and I open an app. And that's more and more, you know, and I'm nearly 40 years old, so I'm not even the young generation that's coming up who's growing up reaching to their mobile to do everything. And I think as consumers, we're starting to make a lot more of our purchasing decisions starting online and starting from our handset. So it just makes sense that that's going to go into food. And food solves a lot of different things. There's a big emotional connection with food. There's cooking is an amazing experience that a lot of people really enjoy. Going out to restaurants is also an amazing experience that, like, most of our hallmark events in life are celebrated by going to restaurants. What we do is we want to make those things more memorable, more experiential for you by helping you through the week with great tasting meals that are healthy, that are convenient, that take away a lot of those moments where you're going to go fast food and get unhealthy meals. And the reality is, what we want to do is, you know, someone like you who likes cooking, who enjoys our turkey chili, and thank you for that, is what we want to do is give you more opportunity to cook. So when you do cook, you're really enjoying it and you're not thinking of it as a chore. You're thinking of like, this is an experience that I want to spend my time, because the reality is, for almost every consumer, time is becoming by far our number one asset, more so than money, more so than anything else. That time that we commit to doing something is becoming scarce. And as we work more and we have dual income families, you know, how we allocate and spend that time is really, really important.
Yeah. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier was just obviously in America, the diet that most people have is straight up unhealthy. it's a leading cause of death. And I think maybe one of the criticisms, you know, against the way that food has been sent in the mail is the accessibility of it, both geographically and price-wise, has not really been there to be able to service the whole population yet. I know that you've been operating in very specific zip codes. You're launching nationally at this point. How do those different ideas fit in together?
Well, I think so. I think consumers are 100% right that it is certainly sitting on the front 50% of the bell curve. But if you look at most innovation, it has to start there because that's where you have to start before you can start going, you know, to service the entire population. You know, at Freshly, we try to take a holistic view and look at how do we continue to not only, one, move our price down, which last year we decreased price by 20%, but how do we also make sure that in communities where we're operating that we're being good stewards? So this year we've given over 600,000 pounds of food to the Phoenix Food Bank. We're actually participating for the month of September with Feeding America, where we're actually, for every meal that's purchased this month, we're giving a meal through Feeding America. So there's no question that there's a dichotomy or a separation in the U.S. with, you know, people who are eating too much and people who are now malnourished. And we don't claim that we're solving either completely, but we do acknowledge that and we are participating on both ends to say, hey, how do we, and again, I think this is something that great companies like Whole Foods led with early, is how do you be a great steward of the mission that you're trying to do? And how do you really think through not only your consumer, but also the consumers that aren't able to purchase your product, but who need these solutions as well. So it is a big focus of ours. I do think that if you look at what has been happening, not only with meal kits, but also Freshly, is the prices have consistently come down, which means more and more people are able to afford them. And that's similar with any modern technology, you know, whether it's airbags that were in a car that were originally only in premium cars and now are in every car, to the iPhone. Usually these things start out as premiums and then come down as they get more affordable and more mass market.
And tell me a little bit about launching nationally. I mean, that has to be a really hard challenge, just supply chain wise.
Yeah, it's a big challenge, and it's an exciting one to take on. It's something that we've had in our lens for a long time. We've always wanted to go national. Some of the logistical challenges are making sure that you can source the high quality ingredients across the country and making sure that vendors can meet your needs. It's a new model, and we're taking on the East Coast for the first time. And so just ramping the size of the operation, the amount of people that we need to hire to build that is another huge focus of us coming into 2019 here. And our target launch date for our national launch is January 2019, so we can't wait.
Wow. Describe a little bit about the supply chain and the logistics around what you do. How does something go from, you know, ingredients to being delivered to someone?
Yeah, I mean, I could say the fun thing is when Carter and I started this, the two of us were trying to figure this all out. And that was extraordinarily complicated because we didn't know what we were doing. I think the really exciting thing about building a company and doing these things is you bring on really talented people who have dozens, 20 years of experience doing what we're doing. And I think, you know, as Carter touched, this is a massive operation we're opening in the East Coast with supply chain logistics, inbound, outbound logistics that is crazy complicated. And if it was up to the two of us, it would be destroyed. But, you know, so we, you know, on any given day, Freshly starts producing. We take raw ingredients. Those raw ingredients are, you know, all natural. So that's a big part of Freshly, is all natural. So it's literally fruit. I mean, it's vegetables. It's meats, proteins. Within 12 hours, that's fully cooked, packaged, and shipped. So think about the crazy amount of logistics that go into 12 hours of taking food at scale, producing that, making sure you have food just in time, and then shipping that. And we'll ship that overnight, 2 day. To this will now be 48, we'll hit all 48 states in the continental United States out of two facilities. So it is an absolutely insane process with a ton of exceptionally smart people, way smarter than both Carter and I, who help us manage that on a daily basis. But it is, you become a logistics company, you become a, you know, a purchasing and procurement company. All these things have to work to make sure that we can get you a meal at the end of the day.
You talked about, you know, hiring people with 20 years of experience, but there's also things that you're doing that you had to invent. They didn't exist before. The best practices for how you send food in the mail are evolving. They're just only a few years old. I'm curious, what did you have to invent versus what could you reuse from the existing supply chain?
Well, there's an old saying in movies that there's no such thing as a new movie. It's just a reinvented movie. I think, You know, a lot of what we've done is taken processes in other businesses, whether it's e-commerce companies, and adopted those. You know, one of the things we were very early on is innovation around sustainability and packaging. And that was kind of when we started, we were using styrofoam and we hated it, but like there was no solution. So we've worked really, really closely with shipping providers to say, hey, what else is out there that we can get insulation? And we were one of the first ones to go to recycled denim. And then as we got bigger to jute, and jute is basically, you know, what Starbucks buys is coffee beans in a bag and that gets recycled. So the idea is, hey, can we reuse product that is out there and is existing and that otherwise would just go in the landfill? And can we do this constantly and continuously to make sure that we're building sustainable packaging for the end consumer, but also making sure that we're building a supply chain that is doing what it needs to do, is keeping your food cold. So those are, and I'd love to say, like, you know, we work very closely with great partners who've helped us do this. And it's hiring people who never accept the status quo and are always saying, how can we do better? And while we've come a long way and we are proud of our packaging and our sustainability, we're constantly challenging ourselves, can we do better? Can we reduce the total amount of packaging, the total amount of waste? Can we get better to having materials that are easier to recycle? And I think that's hiring a bunch of people who sign on to say, we want a better world and we're going to build this. And we know that we have to, in order to do that, we have to continuously, constantly challenge ourselves and then find partners like that.
Yeah. And one thing I would add is Mike and I are very well aware of what we don't know. And one thing we've done since day one has been tireless about asking questions. So you find those experts, you find those partners, you find those vendors, and you say, so how has this historically been done? And then you ask why about 20 times. And we've been able to innovate based off asking until you get to the point where they say, well, I guess no one's ever asked me that. That was just kind of the way it's always been done. And we come back with, well, what if we tried this? Or what if we tried that?
And then the final thing is, I think, along with Carter said, is then fostering an environment where everyone feels the need and wants to test, knowing that failure is part of testing. So knowing that you're not going to get everything right, and being open to discussing why things failed and then re-ask, why did that fail? And I think it's a constant idea of, in software development, they call an agile methodology of continuous deployment, constant improvement. And I think we often say that we're creating the software, we call it the softwareification of food, in that if you think about the way software is done, we just had iOS 12, which I'm a big tech junkie, launched yesterday, but we all know that iOS 13 and 14 and 15 and 16 is coming down the pipe, and companies that approach problems in that direction is that you should always be improving, always be focusing on what's tomorrow. The innovation never stops, and it comes around asking a lot of whys, and then you have to do that to yourself as well.
When you think about sustainability, something that I don't think has really been properly measured or figured out is the difference between the old supply chain of individuals getting in their car, going to a grocery store, buying ingredients, walking around, coming back, preparing all that stuff, and that stuff arriving at the grocery store, you know, via various like freight carriers and all these different things, versus, you know, you receiving this stuff and having the packaging in your home. They're so different. The carbon footprint of each approach, I don't think, has really been compared well enough yet. There just hasn't been enough time for this stuff to be studied. How do you like think about that at a macro level?
Here's some disturbing facts that are often aren't communicated. So in the U.S., 30% of all food that is produced is thrown out. So that means our hard work from our farmers, our ranchers, 30% of their work is for naught. 1 in 7 truckloads of produce and meat that goes into a grocery store is thrown out. The second largest contributor to methane gas in the U.S. is food in landfill waste, which makes up the largest contributor to landfill waste. So there is so much hidden waste that you as a consumer never see. And then we look at ourselves when we go to the grocery store. I don't know about your listeners, but I can certainly speak to myself. We do a horrible job in matching our own supply and demand. So we go to a grocery store, we buy more food than we need. We throw out half the milk that we purchased. So when we think about how do we as a country take on, whether it's global warming, take on the needs of making sure that everyone has enough food, as well as, you know, as the world's growing and populating, how do we make sure that we as a world are able to meet the needs of you know, the 7 billion people that are going to be here in the not too distant future. And it really becomes around how are we more efficient at using what we have? And I think when you nailed it as far as the carbon footprint of like, what exactly is the total carbon footprint when you include waste, when you include the waste of the grocery store, going to a store, all of those things add up. And I think, you know, Freshly's been very focused on how do we build a sustainable business, which is going to improve this. So if you look at Freshly, you know, less than a half of 1% is in food waste that we use, meaning we use everything. So less than half than 1% goes to food waste. Any food that we can't use goes to one of two directions. It either goes to pig farms, where we can actually reuse that as feed for livestock, or it goes to a landfill with a methane recapture. So we're actually using the methane that's going to be produced off that food, biodegrading and turn it into electricity. And, you know, again, Freshly still has work to do as well. So I don't think we've crossed this, you know, ability where we're perfect. And I'm not saying that, but as a food system, as a country, we need to look at the holistic thing better and not just what's in front of us. Cause that's, you know, when you see the packaging waste, and that is fair. And I do think people should continue to criticize that. It is in your face, but what you're not seeing is all the waste that you never see.
How do you go about educating your customers about the sustainability and that the huge trade-offs and differences in the old way versus the new way?
Yeah, so I think it's two pronged. So I think one, it's hard to educate people on really complex things, and I think people have a lot going on in their life. So, you know, that ends up being a very complicated thing. So I think the best thing Freshly can do is to continue to succeed at what we do and change from the inside out. And I think the best thing a consumer can do is, as you do discover these, is support companies that do what you think they should do. And, you know, the dollar goes a long way. It's the greatest voting mechanism we've ever invented is the United States dollar. And when you support those companies and build that upon, then by definition, other companies are going to follow that because they're going to go after those votes. And that's how we change the system from inside out. I think, you know, we probably need to do a better job on communicating the work and efforts we do. We generally, again, this is why we're big fans of companies like Whole Foods, is our belief is that this isn't necessarily something you should brag about. It's something everyone should be doing.
I know that before it was called Freshly, you were F3 Foods. Talk a little bit about the branding aspect of communicating with customers, what you do, and the change of the name, the new identity that you developed.
Okay, so F3 Foods was the lack of branding expertise in-house. That was the brainchild of Mike and myself, who have no branding background whatsoever. It stood for Fast, Fresh, and Fit Foods. And we started it in Tucson, Arizona. And it was just something we put together real quick. And F3 was adopted by, it's what we started calling it and what our original customers started calling it. So we ran with it. So F3 and F3 Foods was the first iteration of this business model. And then as we were able to grow, Mike and I were always committed to investing in resources and expertise across the board, any aspect of the business as we could. And so when we were bootstrapping, it was really hard to get any kind of branding expertise. But as we were able to secure some early seed funding, we were able to invest with some partners that had branding expertise. And we worked together with them to come up with the idea Freshly.
Were there any challenges of communicating with your, you know, customers who knew you under F3, or did everybody say, okay, Freshly is obviously a much better name?
I think it was such an example of how bad, you don't know how bad something is until someone improves it. So I think our customers were as excited as us to no longer call it F3. And I think, you know, to our agencies, once Carter and I saw it, we were like, that's it. We literally didn't think about it a second. We were like, they did an unreal job capturing what we were trying to say. And the name fits so well with what we do and how we go about producing and getting food to our consumers that it just fit. And it was such a better name that our existing customers loved it from day one.
Yeah, and it was kind of serendipitous because Mike and I, the non-branding experts, were always brainstorming names, and Fresh was one word that kept bubbling up to the top. And so when we were working with these agencies and they presented us with some ideas and they came up with Freshly, we kind of both looked at each other and got chills because it was something that we hadn't refined, but it was a key word that kept bubbling up every time we started thinking about what the brand would be.
How'd you go about finding agencies or an agency that would do a good job like representing your ideas?
Yeah, so I think I would argue that your number one job as an entrepreneur is to find people smarter than you. People who will help you do that as investors. And if you find the right investors who've already done it, who've built businesses, who have these great contacts, it's almost like cheating because they have a vested interest because they've invested in you and in you succeeding. So they will go way beyond what anyone else will. And I think Carter and I were lucky. We brought on a company called Brand Project with CEO is Andrew Black, who's the CEO and founder of Virgin Mobile Canada and just a very smart individual around you know consumer product good companies and he basically gave us his contact who was a brand agency and that jump started us. And then we were lucky enough when we moved to New York, Highland Capital Partners invested and Bob Davis, who is our board member and you know a huge advisor to both of us, introduced us to a brand agency who did Harry's Shinola called Partners in Spade, who's absolutely amazing. And Partner in Spade did kind of the rework of that brand. You know, when you work with people who get the company's vision, who understand what we're doing, who are excited by the mission and the vision, and who are experts in what they do, it just really resonates. And it was something, you know, there's been a few moments in Carter and I's journey where we've been able to sit back and be like, wow, it's now being told in the direct in the way we always wanted to say it, but we never knew how to say it. And I think, you know, at the end of that Partners in Spade engagement on the final rebranding, we really felt that we're like, this was the brand that we wanted to build. We just kind of never knew how to make it. We knew where we wanted to go, but we just didn't know how to do it. And I think, again, those are great examples of, you know, we had great investors who were able to get us to these brand agencies and they made a huge difference. But in any field, no matter what it is, engineering, design, you know, facilities, there's always experts out there. And as an entrepreneur, beg, steal, borrow, find the way that you can speak to the smartest people in what you're doing. You know, it's our investors always say, and I love it, is punch beyond your class. So, you know, always go out and try to find someone who, by all logic, should never be working with you because you're too junior. And you should always be reaching for those. And they will deliver such magic for you and your company and your brand that it's hard to, you know, put a dollar amount on that.
So you've hired some great experts. But aside from being experts at hiring experts, what are you two experts on?
I think, I mean, so Carter and I bring a tremendous amount of passion to what we do. I think, as founders, one, you tend to be a little naive. If you weren't, you would never get into what you do. but you believe in what you're doing. And I think, you know, that's the number one thing I'd say to anyone is you are going to, especially in the early days, it's 20-hour days. It literally is 20-hour days that Carter and I put in. And you do that because you believe in something. You believe that you're going to be able to change the world. You believe in what you're doing. And I think Carter and I have continued to bring that passion. I can say for Carter, he's absolutely, you know, one of the, I would say, premier experts in the new way of food, health, thinking around wellness, around, you know, how we should as consumers be eating, and kind of self-trained and much more of a biohacker around, you know, I'd say the Tim Ferriss types. And, you know, it was perfect and it was symbiotic for me because like Carter was the person I'd go to and say, hey, Carter, what should I eat? How should I, you know, what vitamins should I take? And me, I'm just good at speaking. So that was just actually, it can be somewhat of a valuable trait in a startup. But I think, you know, the fun thing for us is Carter has a great passion for eating great food, but he's a true wellness expert and nutrition expert. And I just have a passion for things being done for me. So it's been fun and you know, we've been able to share that, but also really believe in what we're doing and have fun doing it.
I was just going to say, I would add one. I appreciate the confidence boost from Mike because he's too kind. And for his strengths, I would absolutely say incredible visionary and unbelievably disruptive mindset and will challenge and question everything ad nauseum and is always thinking 20 years out. And is absolutely the throttle behind this mission, and no vision is too big for him. And you said aside from, you know, the hiring, and I would really say that that's one of the biggest things is that I'm the most proud of is the team, and I look forward to waking up every single morning and working with this amazing team we've been able to assemble. And if you're able to recruit and bring on great people and get them aligned with your mission, I would say, you know, I hesitate to call myself an expert at anything, But if I could give that ability to recruit and attain amazing talent, leverage their experience and expertise towards your mission, that's been the secret sauce.
Carter, I want to ask you about the wellness thing. There's obviously, trite ideas of people should eat healthier, but that doesn't really mean anything. I'm curious, in your philosophy of how Americans should eat, what are some of the specific things that you've tried to embed into Freshly, into the recipes, into the ingredients that you use?
No, for sure. And taking one step back, I say, my passion for health and wellness comes from my father, who is an emergency room physician and then transitioned his career from emergency medicine into health and wellness and preventative medicine, and now runs a wellness practice out in Tucson, Arizona. And so growing up with him, I really got a secondhand education and someone under my same roof to ask any question I could think of. And as an athlete growing up, I was obsessed with improvement and, performance and how can I optimize my performance. So that's really where it started. And then I just continued hacking and playing with it and testing and iterating just like anything else. And just like we've attacked this startup Freshly. But we've been able to translate that because I think people make it very complicated. And health, like you said, is an undefined term, and it's very polarizing. So what I try to do is get people to focus on the basics. So one, everyone is, up in the clouds arguing philosophically, but no one's taking a step back and saying, what are people actually eating? What are people actually doing? And when you look at the American diet, the average American eats 60% processed foods and dangerously processed foods. So this is your high fructose corn syrup. This is your dangerous hydrogenated oils. This is your refined sugars. And so step one, we want to pull all that junk out. And so we don't allow any of that stuff on our menu. So similar to a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods, we have a banned ingredient list of over 85 ingredients just to cut out all the artificial flavorings, colors, preservatives that are so ubiquitous in food. And we want you to start with an all-natural base. Then we don't want you to be scared of a macronutrient. And your macronutrients are your proteins and your fats and your carbs. So behind the scenes, we work really closely with our culinary team and with our team of nutritionists to balance our meals. So we want people to eat a high-quality protein source, not be afraid of the healthy fats, the right fats like your olive oils or your avocados. And then also your carbohydrates. We don't want you fearing carbohydrates because I love to remind people vegetables are also carbohydrates. And so we try to do veggie heavy, healthy fat, healthy source of protein and a really balanced meal. But so much more than what you're eating is what you're not eating. And that's really what I like to focus on.
There's so many things that you have to balance when you're coming up with the recipes. Obviously, it needs to be flavorful, needs to be healthy. You have, portion size that you have to accommodate. Different people eat different amounts, but you're also, working towards people eating slightly less. You also have these like big picture goals around sustainability and food waste. Like, we know that you mentioned this, Michael, that meats are one of the biggest methane producers. Like, how do you find a way to balance all of those things when it comes down to just actually creating a recipe?
Yeah, so I think as Carter said, is sometimes people get too focused on one thing or the around the edges. So what we try to focus on is what are the things we can do that are going to make the biggest impact on you. So reducing sugars, those things. Mm-hmm. And I think we do the same thing when we look at balancing the meals. We have some meals on our menu that we'd say are very, very healthy. We have some meals that we'd say are healthier options, but maybe really higher in carbs, like our pasta dishes or something like that. But what we want to do is get people thinking about healthier decisions and healthier choices. And we'd say the same thing around sustainability, is that you don't have to go lights on, lights off. Not everything needs to be binary. Warren Buffett says the eighth wonder of the world is compounding interest. And the idea is that little improvements today held consistently make for big, big, huge improvements. So improve 1% a day, but commit to that. Improve just a little bit today. And I think, and I'd say this for Freshly, I'd say this for every food company out there, and I'd say for every consumer, is think about health as a lifestyle, not as a diet, an on and off. Think about it as what little change can I make today that I'm going to stick to? And, Carter does a lot of this with our own company and talks a lot about it, is that Americans especially have this lights on, lights out. Oh, it's New Year's. I'm going to come up with five New Year's resolutions. And just take something small, stick to it, do it for 90 days, and then add something else. And I think that's what Freshly's approach is try to be. And we do a lot around data. We do a lot around, you know, how do we pull information out of you? But it's more around like, hey, make the little changes. And so often, look, if you're LeBron James and you're listening to this podcast, you
hi, LeBron.
Hi, LeBron. You have different needs than 98% of us, right? Like there are peak performance athletes who are optimizing the last 3-5%. But in general, if you look at the US, 60% of Americans are overweight, 33% of Americans are obese. To Carter's point, it's less about like these, you know, are you keto, paleo, whatever you want to do. It's more about, hey, can we make some small changes consistently as a society to get people healthier and to make these choices easier? And I think that's what Freshly's mission is we don't pretend that we are the most perfect, healthy, all like, you know, be all end all for health. And there's not a healthier way to eat. Freshly's it. But we say like, we are easy. We're consistent. We're affordable. We taste great. We eliminate all these things that you should never be eating ever. And we just make that easy for you. And that's a great place for people to start and to journey and think about us replacing your fast food meal or any of those things. And I think, you know, that's really been the great thing about Carter is taking the insane amount of knowledge he has and the quirks and the biohacks that he does personally, but say, you know, what is right for me who's a little nutty with my health, and what is right for everyone that I can translate this into, get, you know, something for the masses. And I think that's what we've done a good job. Again, still tons of improvement at Freshly, but we've done a really good job, I think, getting that out to the consumer.
You have this idea of stealth health. Can you describe, like, is that something that you measure every recipe against, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, so we're always looking at every single meal, and then we're saying, how do we make the Freshly spin, or what we call the Freshly factor? So what is special about this meal? What is healthier about this meal that only Freshly does? And so I'll use a meal as an example. So we have a buffalo chicken, and instead of frying it, we bake it. Instead of using flour or a breading agent, we bread it with cassava flour, and then we bake that. And then we have a sauce we make in-house. It's a buffalo sauce without the sugar and without the sodium or any of the other unhealthy ingredients that are typically in buffalo sauces, but still nail that buffalo taste. And then we serve it with what looks like and feels like mashed potatoes, but it's actually mashed cauliflower, and it tastes great. So what we're trying to do is we want someone to eat a meal that says, that tastes like, wow, this is great buffalo chicken and mashed potatoes, but it's actually a very healthy buffalo chicken, and those mashed potatoes are actually mashed cauliflower. And so that's an example of how we incorporate stealth health into our meals.
Are there ideas that you, assumptions that you had, whether it's health or sustainability or anything about building the company, that turned out to be wrong?
Oh, there's too many. We have, I think, again, it's that idea of test, test, test. So I think, you know, one of the things when we started is we focused a little, because we were coming from a little more of eating paleo, which certainly Carter and I both, you know, come from pseudo CrossFit and that community, and we're big fans, and we were more focused on paleo, and we were more focused on this kind of rigidness. And what we realized is that what people really needed is a solution that can work for them every day and not feel like they were constantly on a diet. And I think we as individuals felt that. And that's when we really worked, and that was more of our F3 as we pivoted into Freshly. It was really about turning from, hey, we're going to help you eat the paleo diet or whatever that diet may be, to, hey, we're going to take a lot of the learning lessons from the paleo diet or keto or Mediterranean diet or any of these different diets, which are kind of all very similar. And we're not going to necessarily be married to one, and we're going to be able to switch in and out, but we're going to give you the best of these different things, so you can, you know, really build a lifestyle around that. You know, we call it non-judgmental, is non-judgmental eating, is that, like, you know, we're launching in, I think, 3 or 4 weeks, a healthy mac and cheese, which, is it our healthiest dish? No, it isn't. But the reality is that people love mac and cheese. So if you're going to eat a mac and cheese, we want to make it substantially healthier than your other mac and cheese that you get in the market, 100% gluten-free, all these different things that we put into it. So we do some fun things where consumers can still get those kind of guilty pleasures, but they're a lot less guilty. And then we can also remind them and guide them in the right direction that, hey, this, you know, this dish is maybe a little healthier than that dish.
And it's a little bit cliched in the wellness community, but it's very true. We don't want to be a diet. Because the way we use diet in our culture, it's very temporary. I'm on a diet. I'm off a diet. This diet is so hard. And we really want to be a lifestyle. So what we decided early on in some of the learnings, we didn't want someone on Freshly for 1 week or 30 days. We want someone on Freshly for life. We want it to be a major part of their ongoing healthy lifestyle.
Carter, you mentioned that Michael is a big visionary. I'm just curious, when you think about the next 5 to 20 years, like assume that Freshly is as successful as it can be and that like America gets behind this movement. What do you think will be different about America in 20 years?
All right. So some big ones I definitely think are going to happen. So one, the consumer is becoming much more aware and cognizant of what's healthy, what's not. They want labels that they understand. They want ingredients that they understand. So I think a much more aware consumer base. I also think much more technology infused into food. And what I mean by that is tracking, personalization, kind of food meets quantified self. I think that's going to be massive. And really, I think food as a whole is going to change. I think slowly but surely, less and less people are consuming sodas and fast food. And I think are opting for more and more healthy options, especially as they become more and more accessible and more affordable.
I know that some of your competitors or like the big food conglomerates are 150 years old or more. When we see the trend that they followed, it was about obviously like lowering the costs of making their food and increasing the addictiveness of their foods, which sort of, you know, lines up well with capitalism in a certain sense, but it doesn't necessarily line up well with a healthy population. And I just wonder how we address that.
Well, I think, so I would say that at the end of the day, capitalism is about selling your product to the consumer, right? And I think what you looked at in the 70s and 80s is a consumer who didn't know because they didn't have access to the information. That is fundamentally forever changed with the internet. Information is accessible by everyone. We can get access to some of the greatest people in the field, knowledgeable. You can find out from forums exactly what's going into different recipes. It is the fundamentals of consumers in an era where they can know more is I think really exciting. And I think while big food was to blame and holds the responsibility of a behemoth, a big portion of the responsibility, I will say that there is a changing in the guards. And that big food is recognizing it. And, you know, Nestle, who made an investment in Freshly, did so solely because they recognize that they have to be part of the solution. And you see Kellogg's, General Mills, Campbell's. Now, they're all doing it at their own pace, and they're all big, huge oil riggers that take a long time to turn, but they are turning. And I think that, as a world, we need the Nestle's, the Kellogg's, the General Mills, the Cokes, the Pepsi's. We need them to change and move quickly. And I think, you know, you look at what Pepsi did, and I know their CEO, she's just stepping out. But, you know, they made big, huge investments. And it's small because they still have a lot of room to go. But it's heading in the right direction. So, you know, I'm more of a glass half full than a glass half empty. And I think that we're making the changes. And you know, I'm proud of Freshly and what our team has done to be really leaders in that. And, you know, it was a tremendous honor for our entire team at Freshly to have Nestle invest, because Nestle didn't invest because they wanted to change Freshly. Nestle invested because they wanted to change Nestle. And that's a tremendous honor when you can be part of that. They're the largest food company in the world, and they look to us to say, how can we do better by our consumers? And that was, you know, that's something I think is exciting. Certainly exciting for us, but I also think it's exciting for the consumer.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. A lot of the big, you know, food conglomerates, when you look at their stock price and their sales, it has been like slipping, and a lot of it is because of that change in perception and education. And so if we can keep pushing in that direction, and as Carter, you mentioned, like the next generation grows up in a world that's maybe a little bit more aware of what healthy food looks like, that those, you know, big shifts can happen over the next, you know, 30, 40 years or something. really exciting stuff, really inspiring. If people want to find out more about Freshly, they could go to freshly.com and sign up there. Is there anything else you want to point people to?
Yeah, follow us on Instagram at Get Freshly. And yeah, I mean, check us out online, freshly.com. Let us know. We have an amazing support team. So if you have any questions, any additional questions, feel free to call us up, chat with us online, whatever way we can help you out, we're happy to. And, you know, we're always excited to share the message. And for those of you that are founding companies, it is tremendous fun. Do something you love because it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun as well.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Carter.
Hey, thanks so much for having us. This was great.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.